Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to News from the Torah. Today is the 11th of April, 2029. The 29th day of the month of Nisan. It is the Torah portion of Tezriya Mitzura, actually two Torah portions. And I'm Leah Aharoni, welcoming you to this exciting episode after a long Passover break. So this week we'll read two Torah portions, Tezriya and Mitzura, both of which are devoted to laws of leprosy. Leprosy. Who cares about leprosy? There's no leprosy anymore. Medicine has beat leprosy. Well, leprosy in the Torah is not a medical condition. It is a spiritual condition that is acquired by speaking badly and disrespectfully about others. And we have a whole segment devoted to laws of speech. How do we talk properly about other people? And what can we not say about other people in order to be decent human beings who use our God-given power of speech appropriately? You know that in Judaism, it says that when God placed our soul into us, we asked, what is that soul? And our rabbis say that our soul is our expression of speech. Speech is what makes us as humans different from animals. It's our unique ability, and we have to preserve it and use it properly for good things and not for bad things, to give others life and energy and support and not to hurt them. Also on this program, Israel is right now in the midst of a very special week. Last week, we commemorated Yom HaShoah, the Holocaust Remembrance Day, and this coming week we will commemorate Memorial Day, the memory of fallen soldiers, and the Independence Day, Israel's 73rd birthday. Some interesting and amazing facts about Israel that you might not have known. And finally, we'll talk about Princess Philip's passing, but more importantly, we will have an entire segment devoted as a tribute to his mother, who has a
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back. So this week's Torah portion, as we just mentioned, is Tezriya Mitzura. It's actually two Torah portions, and they have a common theme, the laws of leprosy, and how to diagnose leprosy, and then how to treat leprosy spiritually, so that a person with leprosy can stop being impure and can regain his or her purity. And in the Torah, leprosy happens not only to people, but also to clothes and buildings. As we mentioned in the beginning, Torah leprosy is not a medical condition. It's a spiritual condition. It was actually a miracle spiritual condition during the time of the temple that was meant to signal to somebody that they are in violation of the laws of Lashon Hara, of the laws of guarding one's speech. So when I first became religious back in 1990s, I attended an Orthodox camp. And in camp, we learned, these laws of guarding your speech, which sounded extremely novel and very different. Because guarding your speech and being very mindful of what you say or what you don't say, actually having do's and don'ts attached to your speech and laws attached to what you can say or you can't say, or even what you can listen to or not listen to, was a very different out-of-the-box idea. Because in most Western societies, people really speak very freely and they feel absolutely fine talking about each other. It's not considered to be inappropriate. Maybe somebody will say, well, no, it's not a nice thing to say. Or maybe somebody will say, we don't speak badly about the dead. But while people might be very mindful of not speaking badly about the dead, who you really can't hurt, the same people are not mindful of speaking badly about other people who are alive, who will be hurt. We say, sticks and stones will break my bones, but bad words can hurt me. And in Judaism, we actually say the opposite. Life and death are governed by your tongue. With your tongue, you can revive somebody, and with that same tongue, you can kill somebody. So I'd like to go through some ideas about Lashon Hara, about these laws of guarding your tongue, to give you a taste of what they mean. So there are two types of conversations that are considered to be prohibited. It is actually a sin, just like eating a piece of pork, to have these kinds of conversations. And Rabbi Baruch of Mezhebush, the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, said that people are very careful about what they put into their mouth, but that not nearly as careful about what comes out of their mouth. So the two kinds of speech, as we said, that are prohibited. One kind of speech is anything derogatory you say about another person, saying that they're not smart, they're not pretty, they're not well off, they're not good to do, they did something wrong, are all prohibited. Now, it doesn't matter if what you're saying is true or false. The information you could be sharing might be 100% true, but if it is derogatory, you're not allowed to say it. And the other type of speech is anything that may cause somebody damage. Anything that may cause another person damage is also considered to be a type of forbidden speech. So it might not even be derogatory, but if it might cause somebody damage, you're not allowed to say it. For example, if you got a loan from somebody, you're not allowed to make that fact public because that person might now be ambushed by many, many other people asking for loans. And that might put them in a very uncomfortable situation. So it's not derogatory that they gave you a loan, but sharing this information can cause them damage. Now, these are two general broad categories. And whatever you're not allowed to say, you're also not allowed to listen to. So that means that if somebody starts telling you a story that contains some juicy gossip, you're actually supposed to tell them, you know, let's change the subject. Let's talk about something else. Or find a way to get out of that conversation. And if you do hear it by mistake, you're not allowed to believe it. So now you will say, okay, but what happens if I need to find out some information about somebody in order to keep myself safe? I want to get married to somebody. I want to have a business deal. I want to have an interaction with this person. There are some cases where you need to know this derogatory information and there's a purpose to it. So the same laws define that if there's a certain purpose to getting this derogatory information, you're allowed to ask for it. But there are many, many conditions to how to ask for it and how to get it, and how to share it, and how to listen to it, and when to believe it, and not when not to believe it. And sometimes you're allowed to ask for information and get information, and act on information, and you're still asked or required to not quite make up your mind. Because speech really shapes our consciousness. And I have seen quite a few cases in my life when somebody shared a fact with me, somebody told me something about another person, and I believed. And then afterwards, that story came out not to be true, or something was different. Maybe one little tiny detail was different. And then the whole story changed, the whole outlook changed. So over the years, I've really learned to be very careful about what I hear. And when somebody starts talking badly about people or sharing something bad about people, I actually feel uncomfortable because I'm not used to these kinds of conversations about people anymore. There's a great story about the Chafetz Chaim, who was a rabbi, Rabbi Yisrael Meir HaKohen. He lived about 120 years ago. And he is the person who gathered all the different laws of Lashon Hara, or of proper speech, and he popularized them with a book that he wrote, Chafetz Chaim, and he's known for his book, and he's named after his book. There's a great story about the Chafetz Chaim, that once he was traveling, he stepped in an inn, and the innkeeper placed him at a table with horse merchants. So Rabbi Yisrael Meir stayed there for Shabbat, and the horse merchants spent the entire Shabbat talking about horses. After Shabbat was over, the innkeeper found out who his guest is, this illustrious rabbi, this very prominent personality. He felt so bad, and he walked over and said, "I'm so sorry, Rabbi. Had I known who you are at the outset, I would have placed you at a table with other prominent individuals or other respected individuals. I wouldn't have put you at a table with horse merchants. They talk about horses the whole Shabbat. That must have been horrible for you." And Rabbi Yisrael Meir said, "No, it was fine. Had they spent the whole Shabbat talking about other people, that would have been a problem. I would have been forced to listen to derogatory speech about other people the entire Shabbat. But they spoke about horses, so it was all fine because I didn't care. The important thing was I didn't hear anything bad said about anybody." And I really started thinking about this point actually yesterday as I was reading about the passing of Prince Philip. And I went on Twitter and saw many young people use really derogatory statements like, "Oh, Prince Philip was pulled out of the freezer now to be shown to the public, and now there's nobody to pull him out of the freezer, so that's why he died." And I thought to myself, how horrible and how disrespectful of people to talk this way about Prince Philip. Now, I know many people feel uncomfortable speaking badly about the dead, but it's not about the dead. It's not about him. It's about the kind of consciousness that enables young people to speak so disrespectfully about somebody three times their age. It's people who really have no brakes on their expression, no brakes on their tongue, no boundaries to their conversation. They can say something so disrespectful about a person who devoted his entire life to serving his country. And with this, I'd like to share one last story. About 30 years ago, Rabbi Huttner, a leading rabbi in Israel, was traveling with his grandchildren from Israel to the United States. And his grandchildren really served him very devotedly and helped him and showed a great deal of respect for him. And there was a professor on this flight who turned to Rabbi Huttner and shared his admiration and the respect and service that the grandchildren showed their grandfather. Rabbi Huttner looked back at the professor and said, "Look, there's really no surprise there. If you believe in evolution, that we all came from monkeys, then you as a grandfather is two steps closer to the monkey than your grandchildren, and then there's no reason for them to respect you. But if you believe that God gave the Jewish people the Torah, that God created the world, God created men, and then God gave the Jewish people the Torah the way we do, then I as a grandfather am two steps closer to being created by God and to receiving the Torah. And then it is only natural that my grandchildren will respect me." So this kind of disrespectful society, the kind of ability of young people to speak disrespectfully about people three times their age, it's really a part of an outlook that places a premium on youth instead of experience, where the young people owe the world. and not the older people. And I think it's an outlook that we need to challenge and rethink. Older people have so much experience. They have wisdom of experience. And this is where we have to place our premium. And this is who we have to respect. And whatever we respect or don't respect, we still have to speak with respect. Stay there. We'll be right back.
Hi, everyone. This is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together, we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back. So in our first segment, we mentioned the passing of Prince Philip of England, and we also mentioned the need for good speech, the need to express gratitude and appreciation for people that deserve that. And on this note, and especially following the commemoration of Yom HaShoah, the Holocaust Day here in Israel last week, I would like to devote this segment of our show to the memory of Princess Philip's mother, Princess Alice, and you will find out soon why. Now, Princess Alice was born in 1885. She was the great-granddaughter of Queen Victoria of England. She was born in the Windsor Castle, and she was born deaf, so she really knew what it is like to be different from a very early age. She learned how to lip read and, despite her deafness, picked up a few languages very early in her childhood. She was also considered to be the most beautiful princess in Europe. But despite all that, she became a very different royal who, instead of being concerned with wealth and privilege and entertainment, devoted her life to helping others. And she also saved Jews during the Holocaust, despite a huge risk to herself. So at the age of 17, Princess Alice fell in love with Prince Andrew of Greece, and they were married in 1903. They had four daughters and a son, and the son, as we said, is Prince William, who would later marry Queen Elizabeth. Alice communicated with her children mainly using sign language. In 1917, Greece experienced a great deal of political turmoil, and the royal family was exiled. Alice and her children settled in Paris, where Alice devoted herself to charitable work, helping other Greek refugees. Her husband, Prince Andrew, on the other hand, left her and went to Monte Carlo to gamble and have fun. Relying on charity of wealthy relatives, Alice devoted herself to her newly found Greek Orthodox faith. She became increasingly religious and believed that she was receiving divine messages and had healing powers. She really wanted to share her faith and experiences with others, but instead she was considered to be mentally unhinged. In 1930, she had a mental breakdown and was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And the veracity of this diagnosis has been challenged and is still challenged, but that did not prevent her family from locking her up in a mental institution in Switzerland. It was so cruel that Alice was not even given a chance to say goodbye to her children. Prince Philip, who was 9 at the time, returned home from an outing, only to find his mother gone. Despite her efforts to leave the asylum, she was kept prisoner in Switzerland for 2.5 years. And during this time, her son was raised by relatives, and her four daughters were married off to various German princes. Alice was not even allowed to attend any of their weddings. In 1932, Alice was finally released from the asylum and she traveled throughout Europe until her return to Greece in 1935, where she settled in a modest apartment and continued to work with the poor. In 1941, Germany occupied Athens. And once again, Alice could be counted on to immerse herself in the work for the country and for its suffering people. She worked for the Red Cross, organized soup kitchens, created shelters for orphans, and she started a nursing service to provide health care to the poorest citizens of Athens. In 1943, Germans started deporting the Jews of Athens to concentration camps. Alice hid a Jewish widow, Rachel Cohen, and her children in her own apartment over a year. Rachel's late husband, Haymake Cohen, was an advisor to King George of Greece, and Alice considered it her duty to save the remaining Cohen family. Alice's apartment was just a few yards away from the Gestapo headquarters. When the Germans became suspicious of her and started asking questions, she used her deafness as an excuse not to answer them. And Alice kept the Cohen family safe until Greece was liberated in 1944. Now, this story was not known, and Alice never made it known, until a member of the Cohen family approached the Jerusalem municipality and asked for a street in Jerusalem to be named in honor of Alice. This is when the story became known and then reached the Yad Vashem. After the war, Alice founded her own religious order. She dressed in a nun's habit and did whatever she could to help the poor of Athens. In 1967, after the Greek monarchy was overthrown, Alice finally returned to Great Britain for the first time in 64 years. She lived her 2 years in the Buckingham Palace with her son, Philip, and daughter-in-law, Queen Elizabeth. And she died in 1969. Although she was a princess, she had no possessions, having given everything up to the poor. Before her death, she expressed her wish to be buried on Mount Olives of Jerusalem. But instead, she was buried in the royal crypt in Windsor Castle. In 1988, almost 20 years after she died, her last wish was finally granted and her remains were sent to Jerusalem, where she was buried on Mount Olives. In 1994, once Yad Vashem, the Jerusalem Holocaust Memorial, learned about Alice's valiant attempt. In 1994, when the Yad Vashem finally learned about Alice's valiant actions to save a Jewish family, she was honored as the righteous amongst the nations. Her son Philip said of his mother's wartime heroism, "I suspect that it never occurred to her that her action was in any way special. She was a person with a deep religious faith, and she would have considered it to be perfectly natural human reaction to fellow beings in distress." So this is the woman who gave birth to and raised Princess Philip. And I think, considering who she was and the kind of personality she was and how devoted she was to helping other people, it is really no surprise that her son saw his duty to his country as his number one priority. And throughout the 99 years of his life, Prince Philip was known to be very devoted and to the country, to the Commonwealth, to the Queen. And we can all have our own opinions of monarchy and British monarchy. We can all have our own opinions of whether monarchy is the best way to run a country and whether the British royal family is really a paragon of duty. But there's no question that the older generation of the monarchy, the Queen and Prince Philip, saw the good of the country and their duty to its citizens as the number one primary goal, to the extent that it took over any personal preferences of their own. And I think for this generation especially, it's an important message. It's an important message that we learned from Princess Alice and from Prince Philip. In this I-centered generation that is all about the iPod, the iPad, the iRobot, everything is about the I. In this generation especially, it is important for us to look up to these people from previous generations and to understand how the duty to others and the well-being of others need to become our priority. That the way to live a legacy in this world is by concentrating on bringing good to the world and not just getting our own agendas fulfilled, our own needs fulfilled. And I really hope that COVID has been able to drive that message for us. We were put into these isolated bubbles. Each one of us was stuck in social distancing. Each one of us has finally had all the I time we ever needed. And it didn't do us any good. And after a year of that, people feel so much longing to connect to other human beings. People feel the need to be out in the society, socializing, interacting, giving and taking from others. We are social beings, and it is our primary need to be there for others, to connect with others, to have relationships. And I think this final message of Princess Anne, that she did extraordinary things, but she never thought them to be extraordinary, that her faith enabled her to do extraordinary feats of heroism, yet see them as perfectly natural human reactions. I think this is what we have to strive for, to really go out of ourselves, to really go out of our way to help others, but without any conceit, without thinking that we've done anything amazing, just being there for other people as humans, as friends, as neighbors, as relatives. This is the way to go, and this is what's going to make us be worthy of being the generation of redemption. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On the Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Hello, I am Walter Bingham. If you want to hear the news behind the news and the true perspective on world affairs, then the Walter Bingham File is the program for you. We bring you interviews with the movers and shakers, political commentaries, and on-the-spot reports of events as they happen. All here every Tuesday, 4 p.m. Israel time, 9 a.m. Eastern time. And it's all archived on our website. Make it a date.
Hello and welcome back. This coming Thursday is Israel's Independence Day. Israelis will celebrate the 73rd birthday of their beautiful, gorgeous country. And as promised earlier, I am going to share some really fun and interesting facts about the country so you can find out more about Israel, about this, how great this country is. And for those who have never been to Israel, I really hope that very soon the skies will open for tourists and you'll be able to come and visit us. Israel has the highest number of altruistic kidney donations per capita in the world. And actually, over the past 11 years, over 1,000 people donated a kidney to somebody. Scientists in Israel have managed to grow fresh dates from 6th-century seeds found in Masada. That's right. Almost 2,000-year-old seeds became fresh dates. Israel is also the only country in the world to have been able to resuscitate a dead language. The Israeli Postal Office has a special Letters to God department for all the letters arriving in Jerusalem from around the world addressed to God. And they're opened and placed into cracks of the Western Wall. And while we're on the topic of the Western Wall, how many notes do you think the people put into the Western Wall every year? 1 million. 1 million notes are placed inside the Western Wall every year. And the Western Wall Foundation cleans those out every year before Passover. As part of Passover cleaning, those notes are cleaned out and they're buried in a way that a sacred text would be buried, because every single note inside the Western Wall is precious and filled with tears and yearnings of people. Going on, Israel has some of the hottest temperatures in the world. The hottest temperature ever recorded in Israel was 54 degrees Celsius. That's 129 degrees Fahrenheit. And that was in Kibbutz Tzirat Tzvi in 1942 in northern Jordan Valley. Okay, but on the other hand, Israel has snow. The most northern part of Israel is the Hermon Mountain, and it has snow in the winter. And the most southern tip of Israel is obviously all desert. Okay, and although almost half of Israel's landmass is desert, we still have an Olympic bobsled team. So there are 7 different climate areas in Israel, and every single climate is available here. If you want to go to the desert, you can go to the desert, and then you can drive 3 hours and go snow skiing. Okay. Israel is the global leader in medical clowning, and it was the first country in the world to send medical clowns into COVID-19 wards in order to be able to cheer people up. In 2007, Israeli businesswoman Sherry Arison initiated the Good Deeds Day to encourage people to help each other. And that year, 7,000 people took part in the project in Israel. Now, 2 years ago, almost 4 million people took part in this project in over 100 countries around the world. Israel has 2 seas and 2 big lakes. The 2 seas are the Mediterranean and the Red Sea. And the 2 big lakes are the Dead Sea and the Kinneret. We call them the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea. And Israel has 137 beaches. And all of them are gorgeous and beautiful. And Israelis love hanging out on the beach. Israel is piloting a new artificial intelligence system to help lifeguards protect swimmers on the beaches and give real-time data on wind, waves, and other possible hazards, ensure to keep everybody safe. And while we are on the subject of water, Israel recycles 90% of wastewater it creates. So 90% of water that goes through our pipes and is used in our households is then recycled and used for agriculture, making it the leading nation in the world for water recycling. I think this closest next competitor is Spain, with about 20%. And the United States only recycles 1% of its wastewater. In July 2021, a group of artists in Netanya created the world's largest mosaic made out of socks, using 12,000 socks in total. And all of them were clean. And while we're talking about socks, an Israeli company called Pulleys has developed socks that are made out of recycled plastic. You get a box of 70 socks, I think, in pairs. You know, they're all the same socks, either white or black or colorful. And they'll come in a box. They're made out of recycled plastic. They're really soft and comfy. and the same sock feeds the entire family. So in my house, we have a five-year-old and her dad wearing the same socks that are made out of plastic. Cows in Israel produce more milk on average than dairy cows in any other country in the world. 10,000 liters, that's about 2,500 gallons of milk per cow. Okay. And Israelis love kids so much that on average, our country has more kids per woman than any other OECD country. There are almost 4 kids per woman in Israel, and that's twice as high as the average in OECD. We absolutely love our kids. And Israel is also the only country in the world where the number of kids per woman is going up, even as women's employment and education also go up. These are usually 2 trends that contradict each other, but in Israel, they go together. The only place in the world where the number of children is growing together with women's entrance into broader educational and employment options. And Israel is also one of the only countries in the world to subsidize in vitro fertilization. So if women need to have an IVF done, Israeli medical system subsidizes it for the first 2 babies, and IVF for the first 2 kids is free. Israel performs more IVFs per capita than any other countries in the world. And babies in Israel are 10 times less likely to be allergic to peanuts than in any other country. And this is because Israeli moms feed their babies peanut snacks from a very early age. Bamba are these corn puffs with peanut butter on it. Israeli babies eat those when they're 7-8 months old, and there are very few peanut allergies in this country. Okay, and while we're talking about snacks, let's not forget about Crembo. Crembo is Israel's favorite winter snack. It's a cookie with cream on top, all covered up in chocolate. There's 7 different ways to eat the Crembo, and it's the quintessential winter snack. It's brought out in autumn as soon as it starts to rain, and nobody eats Crembo after Passover. That's when we switch to ice cream. But in the winter, we have Crembo, and if you haven't tried it, you should. The glue on Israel's postage stamps is kosher, okay? And while we're talking about kosher, Israel has over 50 alternative meat startups, a very high number compared to any other place in the world. And it's not a surprise because there are more vegans in Israel per capita than in any other country. All of this is good news, but here is some other news. Israel is the 8th most expensive country in the world to live in, and Tel Aviv has some of the highest real estate prices in the world. It has been named 5th most expensive city in the world to live in, according to the Economic Intelligence Unit. It's because things are happening, and Tel Aviv is really in demand, and so is Jerusalem, by the way. Okay, an Israeli company has developed a paint that uses sunlight to activate a cooling mechanism on cars, buildings, and planes, and even clothing, providing air conditioning without electricity. The hotter it is, the more the coating cools. And this is really no surprise because it gets pretty darn hot in Israel during the summer. Israel was also the first country in the world to innovate sun panels that heat up water in every household. It's an innovation that goes back to the mid-60s, and every single apartment in Israel has solar panels that are connected to a water tanker. And this is how we heat water during the summer. No need for electricity. No need to burn coal. Israel has more museums per capita than any other country, over 230. Israel also has its very own Stonehenge, an ancient stone circle called Gilgal Rephaim with massive rock walls that are eight feet tall. The stone structure is about 5,000 years old, and it was only discovered in the 1960s. The Mount of Olives is the oldest continuously used cemetery in the world. It's been around for 3,000 years. Okay, this is all we have time for today. It was lovely having you with me on the show. I'm wishing all of you who are in Israel a happy Independence Day. And I'm wishing everybody else here for you to come out and visit us in Israel sometime soon. I will see you at the same time next week. Have an amazing week.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling for the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.